Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews. Beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Elissa Walker Campbell, we want to welcome you back this weekend to the Big E Sports Show. And indeed, we have a very special segment straight ahead. It is always a pleasure when we have the opportunity to tee it up and talk about the game of golf. This weekend, we have secured a wonderful guest that truly understands, as he has said, the simplicities and complexities of the game, and he just knows exactly how difficult it is to master it. Bill Pennington, he is a longtime sports columnist for the New York Times. He has just released his brand new book. It is titled On Par, The Everyday Golfer's Survival Guide. And Bill, it is great to have you on the show. It's your first time on our program in Fort Worth.
It is. Thanks, Alyssa. Fun to be on.
Well, congratulations on the book. I know that you have had throughout your career just a unique opportunity to consult with some of the biggest names in golf. You've played rounds with Tiger and Annika, and you've gotten advice from what sports psychologists. But I thought what was neat in this book is that you captured it all. There's something for everyone in this, and you don't have to be a longtime golfer. I mean, I think it's a great book for Father's Day coming up.
Yeah, thanks very much. I think that the goal was to sort of have a conversation with the recreational golfer. You know, I mean, I help cover the tours a little bit, but, you know, that the pro game is not the same as the game that we play, you know, and it's very different in a lot of different ways. But, you know, mostly it's that it's very social. There's cultural elements. There's a lifestyle element to it in a sense. And there are all these other people that, because I write a column that's aimed at recreational golf, I've come in contact with to do other stories, whether it's, you know, cognitive scientists who study, you know, why we miss 3-foot putts, or golf lingo people that are, you know, there's actually things, such a thing as golf linguists, and who really examine the glossary of our golf language. And there's just a lot of different people, golf psychologists, physicists, exercise scientists, and they've all got something that sort of relates to the recreational game. And that's really what I wanted to do, is talk about our game and how can we enjoy it more.
Well, it really is. I mean, your book is part instruction, part education, part, let's say, therapy. But I think one of the questions that I really enjoyed that you asked is, you talked to, you know, the 2001 British Open champion, David Duval. You've talked to Phil Mickelson, Jack Nicklaus. I mean, and you asked this question. I mean, what makes golf so difficult yet so appealing? What were some of the answers that those guys gave you?
Well, you know, I think it was Duval said is all the time we have to think between the shots. And that's that's a real good point. I think Nicklaus said it was because we have to master so many things, you know, the golf course and equipment and the competition and trying to play with opponents, but most of all ourselves. I mean, I think it's also that it has all these hypnotic, almost hypnotic allures, you know, perfect shots, balls just sort of flying effortlessly through the sky that, you know, and that's a trajectory that you created. And yet at the same time, it has these things that are completely out of our control. That, like, you know, you can miss a green by 3 or 4 yards, hit a car path, and it bounces over the OB fence into the parking lot next door, you know. So, you know, what other game can do all of those things, and yet you're still in it, and yet you're trying to manage yourself, and you're part of a group that's out there, which I think is a really big part of it. You know, the golf tribe, we all kind of march along, you know. It's an individual game, but it's not a solitary journey. You know, that's a big part of the allure of golf.
Well, and Jack Nicklaus, I loved what his answer was. You know, what does make golf so difficult yet so appealing is that you have to, as you had just said, you have to master so many elements, and that includes yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big part of it, really. I mean, especially on the recreational level. You know, we don't have caddies every day, at least walking alongside us, you know, trying to keep us our focus and tell us what we should be thinking about in the next shot. You know, we have to kind of do that ourselves. Although, as I said, I think a big part of the game is that we usually played with others, and I would think, you know, the game would be better if we could all sort of continue to work together and you help the people in your foursome. I know sometimes you're in competition against them, but, you know, it's a really tough game. We can't do it all ourselves.
And it's so true, Bill. I mean, I have a 10-year-old son. He just absolutely loves the game of golf, and I tell him often, you know, it's a game that is... it's a true representation of just life in general. I mean, how do you handle a variety of outcomes? I mean, how do you respond after you shank the ball?
Absolutely true. And, you know, people say, you know, that you really know someone after you play golf with them. And I think that's true, especially if you've played a number of rounds with them. I think that's especially true because I'd like to think anybody could sort of be on their best behavior for 4 or 5 hours. But it tests you in lots of different ways. And I think, too, as I said, I think one of the things that I've learned from talking to a lot of different people is that, you know, if we, you know, can manage ourselves better, I think we'll get even more out of it. And I don't mean, you know, I'm not a commandant of behavior out there, but it's just a simple concept that, you know, people think that if they play better, they'll enjoy the game more, when in fact, if they enjoy it more, they probably will play better.
The title of his book is On Par, The Everyday Golfer Survival Guide. We are going one-on-one with Bill Pennington. He is a sports columnist, an award-winning sports columnist, I should say, with the New York Times. And my final question for you, and I promise we're going to invite you back because we want to have a much longer interview. You've been around the game, what you've played, you've written about it for over 30 years, and you've had an opportunity to grow up around some of New England's historic golf courses. And I noticed in your bio that you've never been able to get your handicap below an 11. I mean, have you ever been tempted to just, you know, throw in the clubs and say, this is it. It's driving me crazy. This game's making me mad.
Certainly, I'm sure there were days. I've tried, you know, as I get older, I've purged all of those from my memory. I mean, I think it's harder when you're young and you really think that, boy, if I just practice an extra hour every day, I'm going to be a scratch golfer. And, you know, it takes more than that. It takes a lot of talent. It takes an enormous amount of time to be that good, unless you're one of the chosen that just are, you know, athletically gifted in golf in a certain way. But, no, I don't think I ever really, more than a fleeting thought of giving it up. I think it's, I think the game, as you mentioned before, can teach you too much, and it can really build so much character and thought about yourself and thought about how you fit in the greater scheme of things. Like I said, I think that you learn how to. There's so many things you can learn. You know, how to deal with other people. You mentioned dealing with adversity, but how to make yourself part of a group. And where you fit in that group and what you're good at in that group. You know, are you the person that's good at uplifting people, or do you have, you know, a humorous side? You know, we all need all those different pieces to make a foursome or even a group of golfers work. And I just think it's the greatest game there is.
That's a great point. Bill Pennington has been with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Again, the title of his book is On Par, The Everyday Golfer Survival Guide. I highly recommend it. I've been going through it. And as I said, you know, Father's Day, I know we've got Mother's Day this weekend, but Father's Day will be here soon, and it would be a wonderful read for this special guy in your life. So, Bill, again, thank you, and we look forward to catching up with you again real soon.
Yeah, I hope we talk again. Thanks for listening.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.
Looking to be a part of a dynamic company that provides exceptional service in the oil and gas industry? Then consider IPS. Integrated Production Services is a leading provider of production enhancement services for oil and gas producers. At IPS, we are currently seeking energetic and team-oriented individuals with a successful track record in the oil and gas field. Here at IPS, we are committed to building a better tomorrow and for future generations through our reputation of hiring the best professionals and industry leaders to serve our clients better. IPS is offering entry-level positions, plus also seeking knowledgeable professionals with experience in logging and perforating, coil tubing and frac stimulation. Consider IPS for your future today. Send your resume to IPS, 2269 North Mash Branch Road, Suite Number 1, Denton, Texas, 76207, or give them a call at 940-484-4481. That's 940-484-4481. Or check us out online at ipsadvantage.com.
The work of FCA can be summed up in four words: coaches, campus, camp, and community. The four C's are vital in fulfilling FCA's vision of seeing the world impacted for Jesus Christ through the influence of athletes and coaches.
The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, we are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We're heading straight to the gridiron, and we always look forward to our informative guest, Jason Peter, with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. And we have got lots of topics, Jason, that we want to get to. But first of all, it is Mother's Day weekend. I hope you have all those special ladies in your house taken care of.
Oh, wow. Thank you for reminding me. That one was going to slip right by me, but I'll figure something out, I guess. Is just a card and some flowers okay?
Oh.
Or is that a holiday where the wife is and the mother are expecting gifts?
That's right. We are high maintenance, aren't we, Jason?
Yeah, well, I try to bring my wife down so she doesn't expect too much.
Oh, my goodness. I hope she's not listening right now. Okay, listen, first of all, we're going to head into Norman, Oklahoma. I got to get with some of my sources up there in Norman, but gosh, big news coming out late this week. Three wide receivers being suspended by Oklahoma, and we do know one thing about Coach Bob Stoops' program. It's no nonsense. I mean, you either obey the rules or you're going to be sitting out on the sidelines. So Jazz Reynolds, Trey Franks, Camille Jackson, they were suspended indefinitely for a violation of team rules. At this point, Jason, we don't know what that's about, but I guess what I want to direct you and ask you is how big of an impact can this have with Oklahoma as the season will be just around the corner?
Well, first off, it kind of makes me look like I put my foot in my mouth a couple weeks ago, because prior to the draft we were talking about the receiver position and how a guy like the receiver that just came out of Oklahoma State, drawing a blank right now, the first rounder, but I was talking about how receivers have kind of changed that, I think, perception of them. You know, the Terrell Owens, the Randy Mosses, guys that you kind of get this attitude, this prima donna attitude, and it's all about me, and how guys like Larry Fitzgerald and Andre Johnson and Calvin Johnson, you have these stand-up type guys that I was saying how, you know, that stigma has kind of left the receiver's position, and now you have this incident or whatever it may be where Bob Stoops has indefinitely suspended three of his receivers. And will that impact the team? Absolutely. I think it puts more pressure on the leaders. It can be a situation like any situation, any distraction. It all depends on how the team and the leaders let it affect, you know, the morale of the team, and do the leaders stand up and say, look, hey, these three guys, they had their opportunity, they blew it, they're obviously not on the same path that the rest of us are, they're not about reaching the same goals as the rest of us are, and you know what, we're better without them. You know, if that's a stance that those guys take, if it's not, if it's something where everyone's kind of down and out because three guys that were going to be a big part of this year's offense are now suspended, you know, is everyone going to walk around kind of, oh, poor me or poor Oklahoma, we don't have our receiving corps now, what are we going to do? And you know, so it just kind of depends on I think the chemistry of this team and how the coaching staff and the leaders approach it.
Well, the suspension is indefinite. It's not permanent. So we'll have to see as the season draws closer, you know, what kind of changes we can anticipate. But you talk about leadership. The spiritual leader for this Oklahoma team, of course, is Landry Jones. And when you have the return of a quarterback like him, you know, the things that he does and provides the intangibles, I mean, that certainly will help the morale a great, great deal. Now, these suspensions, they leave Kenny Stills, and we know what Kenny is capable of doing. He's a terrific player.
Yeah, and I mean, you bring up Landry Jones, and there's a lot to be said about the quarterback receiver chemistry, and you know, with a lot of the offenses that are being run today in Oklahoma, down Oklahoma as well, there's a timing aspect to things, and you know, the ways that receivers run routes, everything changes according to the ways that a defender may try to D up one of those receivers. And, you know, one route can turn into another route. And Landry Jones knows what route that receiver is going to run because he's been throwing the ball to him for the last 2-3 years. And now you kind of you lose that. And, you know, we'll see if the next guys in line can step up and they can kind of build that same type of chemistry. But, yeah, I mean, having a guy like Landry Jones, who's going to be a top 3-4 quarterback, I think, in college football next year. Some think he'll be the best quarterback, you know, either him or Barkley out at USC. But it certainly helps to have a guy that has this will be his fourth year starting. And, you know, he's kind of been through it all, so to speak. And you know, he knows how to deal with whether it's a suspension, whether it's an injury,
right?
you know, he knows how to adapt and how to adjust, and that's something that you're kind of fortunate that you have a guy who's got some experience at the quarterback position.
You are listening to the voice of Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. That's right, we are talking college football. And Jason, one of the things that we always appreciate so much about you being on our program, I mean, you have lived it. You played at Nebraska, three-time national champ, of course, played for the Carolina Panthers in the NFL. And you understand how, you know, losing key players, how that can impact your team and the outcome of a season. In 96, you had, it was an in-season suspension, correct, with one of your key players, and it affected you guys, perhaps even cost you the Big 12 Conference Championship?
Yeah, at least the Big 12 Championship. I know for some people that have had the opportunity to hear Coach Osborne speak, it's something that either gets brought up in the Q&A, usually after he speaks, or sometimes it's just part of his message sometimes, and when he talks about the championships that were won, he tends sometimes to talk about this 96 team, and we didn't win a championship that year, but we had actually started off the season, and we lost to Arizona State, and we worked our way back up into an opportunity that if we won the rest of our games, we'd play for a national championship. And a couple weeks before the Big 12 championship game, one of our linebackers, Terrell Farley, who he was an All-American and one of the best football players that I've ever played with. You know, an undersized guy, but just had a knack for the ball. And he had had some issues during his time here at Nebraska, and it got to a point where it was kind of one of these one strikes and you're done. And it was a week before our regular season finale against Colorado, and he decided he was going to go out, and it was an alcohol-involved incident, and Coach Osborne then kicked him off the team. And, you know, that, I think Coach, when he's getting back to kind of his speeches sometimes, he was that good of a player, Terrell Farley, that it probably was a deciding or a major impact in the last two games that we played. And we were able to kind of get by Colorado that next week, but that following week, as a lot of your fans and listeners down there, some of them being the Texas supporters, remember
right.
The Big 12 championship game, and that was an area that that offense really exploited. You know, we tried to adapt and we tried to make a change, but it just didn't work. So the impact of one player lost can certainly be felt greatly, let alone if you have three guys that are lost. But you know, even when you talk about you know, the leadership, I mean, we had good leadership back then, and it just, you know, sometimes it's just not enough, and especially when it is an in-season thing, and it's like, you know, on Monday the player's there, and he's practicing with you, and then Tuesday he's gone, and he's off the team, and a lot of guys are kind of wondering, well, what went wrong, and what happened, and, you know, you just kind of try to roll with the punches, and you keep on going. So in a way, I think Oklahoma is probably fortunate that it is an off-season deal and not something that happened in season.
Well, those were the good old days when Nebraska was in the Big 12 Conference, but now you guys are in the Big 10, and we want to talk specifically about the Big 12 Conference. It was a huge week as they introduced their brand new conference commissioner, and what was your thoughts on that? I thought they got a nice guy coming over from Stanford.
Well, he's taken on a lot, that's for sure. You know, obviously, coming from Stanford, it's you know, you don't even have to, I think, defend that program and that school and what it stands for. But I think he's got his work cut out. I know that the Big 12 seems to be in better shape now than maybe originally when, you know, Nebraska had started its exit, and then you know, you lose Missouri and Texas A&M, and there was a lot of people, myself included, that probably thought the Big 12 won't survive. But you know, you end up adding a couple teams with TCU and West Virginia, and two teams that have had a lot more wins than losses in the last decade. But, you know, I think everyone is going to kind of wait and see what happens and see if there'll be more expansion down the road. You just never know, I think, when you're talking about college football this day and age as to what direction a conference will be. And even if they have a direction, you just never know what your participating members and their athletic directors and their presidents are thinking. I mean, you know, you could wake up tomorrow and Oklahoma says, we're leaving. We're going to the Pac-12 or we're going to the Big Ten. You just never know. I think everybody's kind of out to protect themselves. But in terms of the Big 12's hire, I think they got a good one.
Well, and there's not a lot of security, of course, when you talk about college football and the new commissioner of the Big 12 Conference. I mean, he admitted that he was apprehensive as far as meeting with the Big 12 because, you know, the league was in danger. They'd lost, you know, four schools over a two-year period. Your school, talking about Nebraska. And what I want to ask you now is you just mentioned West Virginia, TCU, the addition of these two schools. You got to feel good about TCU being on board. But what does West Virginia bring, Jason, do you think, to the Big 12 Conference?
Be interesting to see. I mean, obviously they've had some BCS games as of late, but you also got to look at the conference that they were coming out of, and it was a conference that was down, and I just think it will be a much different story with West Virginia now coming into the Big 12 and having to play quality opponents week in and week out. There's not going to be any gimmies. It'll be interesting to see, I guess, how their recruiting changes. You know, obviously, they're kind of the one school that is kind of off the beaten path. They're not really located here with the rest of the schools. But, you know, my guess would be that they would probably struggle more so than, say, Texas Christian coming in. I think Texas Christian probably will benefit. I think that they will probably succeed, and there's a good chance that they're going to shine in this conference. They kind of were able to win a ton of games down there, all the while being a school that was not coming from a major conference. And now they've been able to add that next to their name, that they're a member of the Big 12 Conference. I think that can sometimes be a deal-breaker with some of these kids that are coming out of school. Well, I would love to go to Texas Christian, but, you know, they're not really part of a major conference, and I want to be in the hunt for national championships every year, and I don't want there to be any reason why, if we win all of our games, we're not playing or winning a national championship. Well, now that isn't an excuse anymore for kids, and I think kids will probably feel a little bit more comfortable committing and going to play for Gary Patterson. I'm not saying that kids didn't before. I'm just saying there's, I think, a certain type of kid. You have kids that, whether they're, and I'm not a big star system guy, but when you're talking about maybe some of the elite players in high school around the country, I think they'll have an easier time committing to Texas Christian now that they're in the Big 12. But yeah, if I had to guess, I would say that Texas Christian probably will, at least initially, have more success. I would tend to think that West Virginia might gravitate towards the bottom of the conference, but I think if you look at two schools exiting, Missouri and Texas A&M, I think you're at least even with in terms of quality of the teams. I mean, Texas A&M hasn't done a whole lot of anything as of late, and Missouri, you know, you take away those couple of years a few years ago with Chase Daniel, and when they kind of had a little momentum, you know, they're a school as well that isn't a major powerhouse when it comes to football. So I think you're at least even, if not, you know, you're probably gaining, I think, a notch with Texas Christian and West Virginia coming in.
Jason Peter has been with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We want to direct you to his website. That is jasonpeter.com. Of course, our radio website is eradiosports.com. We love hearing from you guys at info@eradiosports.com. And Jason, I know we still have a couple more talking points that I'd love to hit on. The NFL's growing concussion concerns. Bill Romanowski, his whining. So we promise that we will talk about that next week. And we appreciate your time and enjoy the weekend.
All right. Take care. Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.